when you have a child, you go through such a huge psychological transformation, you are almost invincible. And then the world tells you you're not. I had an axe to grind at a point to prove and to excel whilst pregnant, whilst being off. Men are seen as more responsible if they have children. One of the things I was told by a couple of really incredible women was, don't advertise it. This is insane.
Yes, because you're just perpetuating the problem.
We've been conditioned to hide ourselves and hide the realities. How prevalent it is for men to say, I wish I spent more time with my children. And how sad is that they could have? We didn't sell it to them as part of their purpose. Everyone wins when men take their leave.
You did something unbelievable, right? Mm. Tell us about that. Hello, my love. Welcome to Motherkind. It is me, your host, Zoe, and we are proudly supported by Wild Nutrition's Women's Supplements. We are the show for you, the woman behind the mother. This is your guide to modern life as a mother, from ambition to relationships to finance to healing. We are here for it all. This episode is with the incredible Vanessa Kingori OBE, the trailblazing media executive who became the first woman in over 100 years to lead Vogue's business in the UK. And she did it while pregnant, deliberately refusing to hide her bump. Vanessa shares the advice senior women gave her about disguising her motherhood at work and why she chose to do the exact opposite, and in the process reshaped maternity culture inside one of the most iconic companies in the world, Condé Nast. This is a conversation about ambition, about motherhood, and the systems that still make us feel like we're failing on every level. Vanessa opens up about the loneliness of modern motherhood and why selling the joy of caregiving to men really matters, and the friendships that have to evolve when you start building the life you actually want. If you have ever felt unsupported or unseen by your organization, this is the episode that you need. It is a masterclass in believing in yourself, in making those career moves, and doing it while feeling incredible about yourself every single step of the way. I cannot wait for you to hear it. You're going to want to send it to every mother in your life. Here it is. Or quickly, before we get to the episode, please subscribe wherever you're listening or watching this. Please share it. This podcast has only grown because of you, my listeners. Be that woman lifting other women up by sharing amazing content like this. Right, here's the episode. I'm absolutely buzzing to have this conversation. I have read and listened and watched so much of what you have to say, and I cannot wait to unpack some of the things and your perspectives. Something that I think is rare about you is that for someone who's had a career like yours, you say the only thing I knew I really wanted was to be a mum.
Yes, 100%. I mean, first of all, I love talking about motherhood. But yes, and it's so strange. When I was growing up, I always felt so jealous almost, or lost, when people would ask my peers and, you know, other kids of my age, kind of, what do you want to be? And they'd say, a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse. And I'd be like, I don't know. I really had no idea. I definitely always had a really strong work ethic, but I just didn't have clarity. It wasn't my focus. But I loved being around children. My mother's a midwife. My grandmother, who I spent my formative years with, was the person whose house was the kind of hub for everybody. And that elder who cared for everyone, made the soups, you know, and made all of the sort of tinctures. And so the houses I grew up in were filled with children and with mothers, pregnant mothers. My mother used to have some of her patients and other nurses at our house. And I just remember, if a baby was crying, people would hand them to me as a little girl. And so I thought, I can't wait to do this. And of course, I wouldn't say my career's come easy. That has not, but it's been quite organic for the most part. And motherhood has been a bit harder to come to, which of course makes me value it so much more. But yeah, the one thing I had such absolute clarity on.
And was it as you expected?
No. I feel like it's amazing. I'm a boy mum and I grew up around a lot of girls, and a lot of the stereotypes of boy mum life is true. They are unbelievably loving. It is like a love affair. You know, I do really understand in raising my son the standard I'm setting for him in terms of how he's going to build future relationships with women and just with other people he cares about. And so it's deeply loving, really intense. There's an intensity of love, which I expected, but it's even more. You know, I was saying this morning to a very dear friend who is probably the closest person to my son day to day as well, because she helps with drop-offs and things like that. I honestly feel that the sense of vulnerability with someone you love that much, it is like walking around with your organ outside of your heart, outside of your body. And that I expected the love, but I didn't expect a lot of the worry. You're just worried. And women, we're just worrying all the time. You're worried about, did they make it on time? Are they okay? Are they getting sick? Are they, you know, what have you? Am I doing the right things? And I think the other thing was, I have been so shocked and surprised about how unnecessarily hard it is for women. I think particularly living in Western cultures and in cities to raise children, because not undermining in any sense what the generation before me did, but what I observed was such an ease in parenthood. There was a struggle in terms of maybe running household, maybe financial and all of those things, but the sense of the village was so prevalent in the spaces I grew up in. Born in Kenya, everyone's around, extended family and support systems. Grew up in the Caribbean, where everyone is your aunt. I mean, I really didn't know who my actual biological aunts and uncles were, because everyone can tell you off, everyone can pick you up, you saunter in and out of different houses. And so I don't, and even when we moved to London, my mother was so smart in building up a really clever network of other really caring, mostly women and some men. I never remember her arranging babysitting. I never remember her making those calls, or we just had this network around us. And I think one of the things I've been struck by is how much that has been ebbed away at, how secluded people are now, and how buying back the network is so much more stressful than being able to afford to live near your friends of all brackets, being, you know, all of the things that make parenting that little bit easier, having grandparents close by and all of those things. So lots of surprises, but nothing. I mean, it's just the best thing I've ever done in my life. Yeah.
And what was so fascinating is that you took this huge job at the point when you just became pregnant.
Yes. Yeah. Well, slightly the other way around. I in my first year of Vogue, so I'd done this publisher role at GQ, and I'd wanted, my partner and I were trying and, you know, having a hard time of it. I'd sort of psychologically put it to one side. You know, when you want something so badly and it's not going well and it just consumes your soul. And we were doing all the things, but I just sort of took the pressure out of the valve. I took the next big job and thought, I'm just going to throw myself into that. And the next big job happened to be, you know, running Vogue, publishing
just
director
that small,
there. Just that little thing. Yeah. And I thought, this is my baby for a bit. And I'm going to do all the, you know, all the other things, make sure my body's in the right place, la, 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 la. And the pressure came from, in terms of work, I was the first woman in over 100 years or ever to have the job of publishing director leading the business of Vogue. And Vogue is the jewel in the crown of Condé Nast and where all the profit comes from. And so it was a really big deal to show women can run the financial side and the business and all of those things. And so I felt this kind of weight on my shoulders, but it was so joyful. I was having such a good time. And of course, everything went smoothly and I became pregnant in the first year, you know. So within that first year, being the first and only, I became pregnant, and suddenly the pressure felt momentarily less fun because I had people say things to me like, well, this is why. This is why they don't let a woman, you know, this is an always on job. And so it really, I had an axe to grind and a point to prove that we're not just as capable, actually, of doing these jobs, but I think it's incumbent on a woman running a women's magazine to showcase that there is a full spectrum of life, and it's incumbent on me and the organization to make it work and to excel whilst pregnant, whilst being off, and all of those things. Like, if we can't work this out, then where is humanity going? What are we doing? You know what I mean? It's like, so I became very deliberate about being very visible with my bump out on the road, very tight black dresses all of the time.
Absolutely love it.
I talked about it a lot more. I increased my social media presence because I felt so frustrated with this narrative of better hide away. This doesn't send the right message. It was almost as though I was being irresponsible. And I just sort of felt like I can hold down two important jobs and I'm doing the most important job in my mind that humankind can do, which is create a life. And if I can manage that, I can run a business at the same time. And I just thought, rather than hide away, I'm going to try to make it that bit less shocking and a bit easier for the next woman. And, you know, I just found it, this was 2018, so crazy, the conversations I was having about the inappropriateness of me being pregnant.
And you phoned some people in your network, didn't you?
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because I can imagine you being like, who do I call? And what did some of those other women who had these big jobs and had kids older, what were they saying to you? Was it helpful?
It was really helpful, both in terms of what I could do, but also what I wanted to change.
Mm.
And so, listen, I am very bold in the moves that I make around career, but I'm just like everybody else. And, you know, when I close the door, I have all the same imposter syndromes and the worries and the so on. And I thought, I'm going to do what I always do. You know, I always in my life, I've never had, and I say this often, official mentors or, you know, any of those things. But I've always had people I look up to in different, you know, for motherhood, for work, for, you know, what have you. And I looked at my network and I thought, oh my God, I know lots of women who have children who are in leadership roles, but I specifically wanted to understand how to navigate being at a pinnacle of your career whilst having a young child. And I realized that in my direct network, I didn't have those people. I had lots of people who could help me and have helped me with the later stage of juggling school and, you know, and all of those things, but not that, you know, postpartum, finding a maternity cover at that level, no one. And so there were not people in my network, actually. There were just, I just sort of looked people up and asked around and reached out to people who were largely perfect strangers and women and said, you don't know me, but this is what I'm navigating. I've read or I've seen or I've heard that I would love just 20 minutes of your time. Every single woman said yes.
I was going to say, there's such a lesson in that.
So amazing.
I don't think I do that enough. It's like when I have done that, 90% positive. Yes.
And I think it's something that women really care about speaking about.
Yes.
Because there are things that are in the shadows a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think this idea that, you know, sort of women are not helpful to each other and things has not been my experience.
It's not been mine either.
Particularly at that level, you know, sometimes maybe at a lower level where people are fighting out. But the types of people who've kind of made it to the top have broadly done that through discernment, through collaboration, and they want you to do well.
Yeah.
They see a chance of almost do-over. You know,
yeah.
So everyone said yes. And these, you know, there was a baroness. These were really colossal people. And many of them had had their kids a long time ago, but it was more about the pivotal point. And they gave me brilliant advice. The things that I learned were no one person had the silver bullet for me. You know, because everyone...
Which is useful to know in itself, right?
Yeah.
That actually you're not missing anything.
Exactly. That whole thing of like, what's the trick? Oh, there is no trick.
Damn.
On one hand,
give me a blueprint.
Like,
there is no blueprint.
Give me the silver bullet. But on the other hand, it's like we're all just muddling through and trying to figure stuff out.
Mm.
And also all of our situations are slightly different. And so you need to tailor things for your scenario. The other thing was that, like I said, there was as much of here's what to do as there was, I don't think I want to do that anymore. That served that time. So some of the things I was told were, do not turn down help. You know, if someone says, can I make that for you? Don't do that. Oh, I've got it thing. This is not a competency competition. Take all the help. Anyone who offers and says, I can pop around and do this, take it. Some of the brilliant advice I was given were, have a conversation with your partner. What practically are they going to do?
Yeah.
Because it's very hard sometimes for men to understand, what is it that you need? This is especially with the first child. And so take some time to really think about the division of labor in your household, the division of time, and so on and so forth. Take time to talk to the most trusted colleagues. Who's going to hold the fort emotionally, socially, culturally, as well as practically when you're not there, which was brilliant.
That's great advice.
It's not one person usually as well. But then there were, and those things were so centering. It's like, oh, I can make a plan. There's tangible things I can do. And you find that your sort of worry dissipates when you have action plans. But there were other things that I remember being told that were well-meaning and told with love, which were, don't talk about it too much. Because the reality is, whether you like it or not, that for men, being a family man is enhancing. Men are seen as more responsible if they have children. So for men, it's really important to have pictures of their wife and children on their desks and around. It is important for them to say, I was at the game this weekend or this afternoon, I'm going to go and pick them up from, because people think there's a responsible man. He's got his life together. And one of the things I was told by a couple of really incredible women was, don't advertise it. Don't have a picture on your desk. Don't talk about it too much. Make sure that your infrastructure is such that you do not have to be the person who's running off for things. And if you are, call it something else. And as sad as that sounds, that's the way the world turns. And as I say, all of them were right. They were absolutely right. And that, because that was their lived experience. And they were telling me it with love as a kind of protection. I felt such a sense of sisterhood, but I also felt a sense of, this is insane.
Yes, because you're just perpetuating the problem.
Well, I didn't feel bad on them. I just felt that, how do we get the system to shift when we are beholden to it and feeling vulnerable?
Yep.
You know, they were talking to me about vulnerable moments in their lives and how they navigated that. And I was thinking about, how do I change it? Which is always my approach, which is a bit nuts sometimes, but sometimes it really works, in that I now have this relative power. I'm running teams of women. I was running teams of men before, many of whom are mothers, are going to be mothers, don't want to be mothers, and don't want to be, you know. And how do I change this narrative again around this idea, double standard of competency around parenting, whilst also trying to establish myself. So that was something for me to grapple with, and I decided to go the other way with that.
Because you did something unbelievable, right? So you then do go back into that big job, and you made it, the changes that you made for the women on your team and the women in Vogue and Condé Nast. Mm. Tell us about that, how you supported those mothers under you.
Well, it was all really incremental. There was no big flagship, I'm changing everything, let's sit down and have a meeting, because workplaces don't really like that.
No.
You know? I think sometimes the theory, I mean, one thing that Edward Enninful really underscored with me, I was going to say he taught me, but it was already there, was let the results talk before you talk about an idea. I remember when we first started working together and I was saying, oh, this is going to be so amazing, we should do lots of press. And he was saying, we don't have our first couple of issues out. You have to let people see something new in action before they can get behind it. Otherwise, people stay skeptical. And so there were lots of incremental things I did, which I just noticed even before I was pregnant, because I'd gone from being the first and only woman running GQ, which was a very male space, and then thought, oh, I'm going to be with women. I loved working with men, but you know, we're going to be skipping through the fields together.
And
I just noticed first, even before the pregnancy thing, one of the first things I noticed was, and it's like a different ecosystem completely, the way Vogue House was laid out then was, if you worked on the first floor in GQ, that was your life, really. If you worked on the fifth floor, and so it was still quite fresh to me, even though I'd been working in that building, was that in a room full of all women, women still put their sanitary products up their sleeves and went to the loo and still pretended that they weren't on the period when they were. And I thought, isn't this where we all sort of, you know, braid each other's hair and talk about it? No. And so we've been so conditioned to hide the reality of being a woman that even before we've got onto maternity and parenting, we're already so used to covering up our realities. And so one of the first things I did was just say, girls, we're all sinking. We all know. Let's be open about this. Let's share products. If you want to, don't say, oh, I need to pop out to make a call when you're actually making a run for it to Boots to get. Like, just be so giving people the space to be themselves, saying to people, it's absolutely fine if you want to leave early because you want to pick your kid up. That's fine because you have a job where you are accountable, right? You'll get the job done. So I think even before we got to the maternity bit is allowing good people to be themselves and be real is the first step to allowing women that peace. You can't just get to the maternity bit and say, switch off everything you've learned since you've started adolescence. We've been conditioned to hide ourselves and hide the realities. And then when it came to maternity, I just realized that there had been the stigma, you know, the person who'd run Vogue before was 74 years old, had been there for 25 years, was very old school. And so women would go away onto maternity almost anxious and tightly wound that their jobs wouldn't be exactly the same when they got back, and so willing to work hard. So one of the things I did is for when I had really good staff, which actually turned out to be all of them because I did a huge amount of work to reshape the team, going off on maternity, I would promote them. And Edward did the same actually with Sarah Harris. He promoted her while she was away. And the promotion was my way of showing internally the organization the value I place on those women. I'm given free rein to run this. I believe that when you have a child, you go through such a huge psychological transformation, you are almost invincible. And then the world tells you you're not, right? You become a better time manager. You become much clearer about what your objectives are, despite the fog and all of those things that are talked up. And I knew if I re-energized a lot of these women whilst they were away, they would feel less badly about leaving that gorgeous little bundle, you know, and coming back. It's hard coming back.
Brutal.
But if you have a new challenge and if you have someone who really believes in you, then there's something like, okay, I can do this. And so it was a really deliberate tool to have those women feel great about their dual roles and about the fact that they were supported, also to maximize them. I wanted them to be like, I need you firing on all cylinders, new challenge. And so not something that was so different, it was terrifying, but just enough so they could puff their chests up when they were going out and they had a little bit of throw up on their shoulder. But also, without saying too much, I knew that everyone in the organization was watching me really closely. How is she getting these results? And we had all of this growth. And I wanted to be able to say, this is one of those reasons. Do you know the people who are performing really well? These women who are new mothers are part of that really high performance. And this is how you unlock that.
Just be goosebumps.
And so, you know, like I said, I'm not some kind of genius. I just grew up around a lot of women who are navigating that because of my mother's jobs and all of my aunts who were maternity nurses. And some of the things I overheard when I was waiting in the break room for my mum were these women talking about, how am I going to cope with this and going back to work? And just hearing that again and again and again and again, but seeing this competency level of like, you're doing all of that on no sleep, running the house and turning up. We need to flip the narrative. And I can't explain that to anyone else. I have to use the platform I have now to quietly just do it. I couldn't even explain it to the women because I didn't want them to feel that they were guinea pigs. Yes. You know, I wanted them to feel truly empowered, and I wanted it to be a meritocracy as well. And so it was just something I did quietly. And it being honest, it was not a charitable act. It really helped my role and
helped
me deliver.
It's a win-win. It's one of those brilliant win-wins. Do you wish more corporates understood about women and motherhood and paternity and maternity?
So many things. So many things. I don't even know where to start. One of them, I guess, is that you women who are highly engaged and excited about their jobs and have children are one of the biggest assets you can have. I really feel that being able to switch from that maternal caring bit to it's a gift to them. And if you can unlock them and support them, you will get so much more. Women who are mothers are brutal time. They are so good at time management. They are not going to let things run over. They need to get out a certain time. They're not going to mess around. There's also so much that happens within the workplace when women are supported well, in terms of the wider nurturing that happens within teams that maximizes a team. And I think it's really important. And I think that the other side that I think is really important is that what men are doing is really, really important. And having men feel that same level of support in taking their leave as well is vital for the whole organization. And it's not just men using this time. I had a conversation the other day with someone I really respect who's running a business that under a huge amount of pressure, and I get this, and they were saying one of their key members of staff is frustrating him because at their most pivotal time, he's taking his full amount of leave when he's got really nothing to do with the baby coming out. And I was just like, sort of without even thinking, just blurted out, like, this is crazy. You are looking at things in such a short-sighted way. Everyone wins when men take their leave. And I'll tell you why. I saw this running GQ. I've seen it at Google. I've seen it at Vogue. Men need that time as well. Their partners need that support. But men come back into the business with a different fire under them when they've had time out. They start to understand. They start to understand what the job means to them in a different way. I feel like this is stereotyping a bit, but in my experience, they come back more empathetic, better team players. They understand women who've taken the time out better on their team. There is less kind of trying to bum rush and grab the roles. What I saw a lot of times at GQ is when the few women who went off on maternity did, who had great roles, there was a sort of gnawing to get part of her role while she was off. Men who go on leave don't do that. When they get back, they get like, I want the protection that you offer everyone else. And I want to support this person because I know what it means to leave a job you love to go and do something else you love. And it just improves the ecosystem. I think that there's just a different kind of fire under people who've taken time out, loved it, but come back more in love with what they were doing before. I think there's a lot more we can do to PR, not just mandate men to kind of take this time because their partners need it. But I think around the whole parenting space, the way that we've spoken to men around caregiving has been a huge disservice to men and to women and to businesses. And I think what we've done is we've said, women need help with the burden of caregiving. And, you sort of got to do this because you've got to play your part and you've got to help her. And it's akin to, you know, fathers looking after their kids and calling it babysitting. You know, it is like there is another sense of purpose for you that is incredible that you need to unlock, because women are incredibly lucky in that we can have this duality of being incredible, locked in caregivers and building our careers. And right now what we're saying to men societally is there's really only one way for you to be valued in society, and that's primarily through paid work. And then there's this thing over here, which you kind of should be involved in. And what we see is that men are having crises around masculinity right now because, well, that's a complex thing to unpack. But one of the reasons, I think, is that if your sole value is something another group of people can also do just as well, it's scary. Whereas actually, if you can be valued in multiple ways because you are a key caregiver to your wider family, those older family members, your children, you can run a home incredibly, and you are valued and praised for that, and it's part of how you access respect in this life, then perhaps women excelling in work and in education wouldn't feel quite as scary to men. And equally, there is a pressure that's being taken off women, but selling it as, here's how you take pressure off your partner, rather than there is this beautiful, incredible unlock, sense of love and purpose you can have beyond your financial output. I think we can change our world. I really do.
It's so true. It's so insightful that we need to sell the joy of it.
Yeah.
We need to sell the joy of it.
We are doing a terrible, terrible job of selling to men how incredible being the primary carer or the equal carer is. We are failing at that. And there's so much that I want to do around that narrative that I think is important within the home, within couples, within families, but also at a societal level. And in a company setting, we're not nailing that for anyone.
No, it's so true, because at the moment, and I guess maybe I'm part of this, is that we do a lot of women talking to, you know, we're sort of over here doing it. And actually, we need to bring this conversation, cast this net far wider.
You know, we're just coming off Women's History Month. And I made a vow to myself that I'm not hosting any more events that are just women, because they feel great. I love being around women. Same. I also love being around men, but there is a sort of sense of like, oh, shoulders down when you're just with someone who can finish your sentence.
Yes.
And no, they've left the house. You know, the conversation we were having before we started of, my son decided this morning at 5 a.m. to drink half a pot of honey. Like, I could end there and you can understand the morning I've had before I've arrived.
Yeah.
there's an ease to just speaking to women, but things don't move forward if we do not include men in the conversations around caregiving, around the joy and the challenge of all of this. And I think once they're in these conversations, and I say this more broadly around everything that's connected to gender, not just parenting, but I think parenting is most pivotal. Men really value being in the conversation and not being bashed. They grow from it. They can be better from it. They understand the nuance more. When they're given the footnotes or the headlines, it feels evasive and they are not bought in. They sort of nod along. And so I think we do have to have safe spaces where women can speak freely. But I think we need to couple that with, how are we bringing men along in this conversation? How are we having them understand the pieces that are most salient for them to understand and to be excited about? And I really think beyond including them, we need to sell the joy and the excitement, because who wants to do something out of obligation? No one. Even if you pay someone a huge amount of money, there are so many stats that say the practical joys of any job wear off. I think it's something like 6 weeks, big pay increase, a corner office, people stop, it starts to diminish. You know, when you sell someone the dream of something, they can run on that for a really long
time.
And
the purpose of it. Yeah. And what is more purposeful than, you know, supporting your child to grow into who they are meant to be in this world? Like, it's
huge.
It's huge.
You know, the other thing, as well as being surrounded by midwives, who I think are a rare and special breed, I've also been surrounded by a lot of people who work in end-of-life care. And one of the things that I've found so profound is how prevalent it is for men to say, I wish I spent more time with my children. And how sad is that, that they could have? We didn't sell it to them as part of their purpose. And so I think when you connect those dots, there's so much more we could be doing to make everyone's lives easier. The fact that women still predominantly feel that they're failing at everything. Working women feel that they're not doing as well as they could at work when they're mothers, which is largely not true. You know, the reality of running large teams are, even when mothers are overperforming, they feel that they're failing because they're just flailing around so much. They're rushing. They're hiding so much of what they're doing. And they also have this duality of feeling like, I'm failing as a mother. I didn't bake for the bake sale. I wasn't there. I missed the inset day. I missed bloody World Book Day. You know, we all feel that we're living in a bloody episode of what is that amazing thing?
Motherland.
Like Motherland. I mean, just like, it's all too real, isn't it? And
I had a friend who said she lives in Teddington where it's filmed, and she went, I can't watch, it's too close to the bone.
Honestly, they do part of the filming around the corner.
Oh,
there's a
they?
School right around, it's on my school run, and I have the shudder the whole time that it's like, I will never miss World Book Day. But there are, you know, so this duality of women feeling like they're not nailing things and they're failing on both fronts, whilst men eventually get to this point of like, all of that stuff I did was great, but I wish I'd spent more time with my kids. That's a formula that we actually have the tools to give everyone a break and a better life and more quality, but we are not building it into our narratives and into the practical ways that we're doing things. And our comms, I mean, you know, I've worked in comms for so much of my life, and it's the comms around it is all wrong, and we need to change it.
How do you keep yourself immune from that feeling that
I'm
failing as a woman, and I'm failing as a, you know, leader, and I'm failing as a mother? When that comes up for you, that thought,
I don't keep
what do you do with
immune?
It?
Yeah, I just want everyone to know no one's not immune. Even the most incredible, I've been so lucky in my life, and I shouldn't say lucky, I'm fortunate because I've worked for everything I have, but it's not lost on me that I've been able to meet some of the most respected, incredible people in such different genres, working in media, so people at the top of the field in media, working in creative industries, people with all this flex and art, you know, people in tech, in corporate. The commonality is everyone feels they're failing. How nuts is that? Everyone feels they're not getting the balance. They left it too late. They started too early. They missed this. I just feel like it's so sad that it's not until later in life that we often go, my God, I did a lot. You know,
I was actually doing great.
I was doing great. I wish I knew. And, you know, what I do is I really try to surround myself with people who are going to speak life into me and dull down. And I have to say, having a family and having my son has sharpened this in me, is I cannot be around people who underscore that feeling. So people who go, you are doing a bit too much, you know, do you think you've bitten off more than you can chew? I'd rather someone who says, you know what, you're absolutely killing it, this, this, and this. I'm not sure if you need to do that, but where I've seen you, you're incredible. There's a you can tell in the way people give the same advice.
It's energy, isn't it? It's an energy, 100%.
And it's a kind of positive intention.
Yes.
So people who have lived the lives I want to live, I really try and befriend them. People who also are not that invested, you know, you can't have your whole friendship group be people who benefit from your being in certain positions. And what I realized when I was leaving Vogue, and I had the dream of a job that literally people would have, and nearly did, bury knives in my back to get. A job that to this day, people who didn't get the job, who had no idea, I didn't interview that for that job. You know, this is the nuts thing. I had a performance on GQ doing a similar job, which meant the owners of the company said, it needs to be you. And I didn't realize how upsetting that would be to people. And years on, over a decade on, there are still people who don't talk to me because they wanted it so badly. So can you imagine when I turned around and said, I've got the dream, but I'm moving on to another. Nothing's going wrong. I get all the lovely things. I've got to build my dream team. I've been given all of this space. I'm working with a dream partner in Edward Enninful. I have a company who are tough to work for, but largely agree to expanding my role and all of those things. But I knew in myself I had outgrown that role. Small things were starting to frustrate me. The direction of travel on certain things, like I'm very good, I now realize, at pattern recognition. I didn't realize that this was a thing.
It's one of the highest signs of intelligence.
Well, I mean, there are other ways.
It's true.
I'm not so sharp, but I just had this sense of this is it. And I couldn't fully articulate it to lots of people. There were certain people who just got it, but either because they were in the same boat.
Yeah.
So it was so helpful that Edward and I reached this sort of thing together and we're like, okay. But I realized at that point there are certain people who want you to do well no matter what, and there are certain people who, usually not maliciously, it's scary for them to see you doing scary things, for you to give up on what would be their dream. And I think even when those people are not malicious, even when they're incredibly close to you and you might have strong histories with them, you have to dial down those voices. And it's one of the hardest, most painful things I've learned, is that you can love certain people and have them belong to a time that is not traveling forward with you. And that doesn't need to mean a big ruckus, sometimes it does, but in order to do really hard things, and I think being a working mother is a really hard thing. It is really difficult. It is not easy. And I want to say that to validate to all of the women out there who are feeling like this is bloody hard, but everyone else is doing it, and so I'm doing it wrong. You're not. It is hard, but it's also worth it. To do that hard thing, you have to do the emotional work of seeing who people are in your life right now, and stepping away, sometimes quietly, without too much energy, from those people who want to tether you to perhaps feelings that aren't helpful, and nurture the relationships of the people who build you into that, are still the realists. And some of those people are people who just don't really care. Some of the closest people to me just don't give a monkeys about my job. They don't give a monkeys about the awards I win. They're not career driven. I need those people around. I need them around. I need them to go, but why is that important again? Because sometimes you get caught up and you go, oh yeah, I don't actually need to be there. You don't, you know, and I also need women who are walking the same path. So one of the closest people to me and to my son's godmother, is someone who works, who's always worked, but is not particularly career minded. She lives around the corner. We went to school, we've known each other since we were 11 years old. She is the person who will say, you need to go to that. Wipe your tears, get yourself ready. I'm coming around. I will look after Charles. And she'll also go, walk me through that, why that's important again. And I need that, as well as the women who are like, girl, I'm juggling it all. I get it. I cried in the taxi on the way to that meeting. So that duality, but nonetheless, the unifying thing around the village of people I have built to help me navigate what is the hardest job in the world, the duality of jobs, are people who speak life into me and keep things real with me.
So it is so, I love it. I was actually getting emotional when you were saying about, you know, not everyone comes with you through every season.
It's hard.
And I think Matrescence, it really did that for me.
Yeah.
Like it in quite a fundamental hand. Way, I was like, whoa, okay. I was a very different person in my 20s.
Me too.
And 30s to who I became through my Matrescence. I really
am
changed.
An empath, and it's not something that many people know because I've had to be really tough in business, but I'm usually tough through understanding. Mm. I see you. I see that you have this capability and you're letting yourself down. And I see, or you're in this job for the wrong reasons. Mm. It's an ego thing, but you have this huge scale that you're not unlocking, right? So it's always, you see the results and you think, oh my gosh, that person's hard-nosed. But the way that I've approached it has tended to be through tough love and empathy, which has tended, not always, you know, I've had conversations where people haven't understood me. But what I have done for people in my life before being a mother is write the excuses for them. So, well, they're kind of not that bothered that I'm doing this, or, you know, they're not that excited for me because they had that difficult thing happen to them, and, you know, and I should give them grace and da 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 da. And after having a child, I can't rewrite who I am. I still do that. I still sort of want to understand why are they not coming on the journey? Why aren't they cheering me on? And I still will say, well, maybe they didn't get that, or what have you. The difference is, that doesn't mean that I'm going to continue to keep you around because I just don't have the bandwidth. I just don't have the energy.
That's it. That's your energy and your time becomes so finite. It's like I just don't have it.
This full circle is what I want businesses to understand. The level of discernment that mothers have to have, the difficult decisions that we are making, that's highly valuable. People who have to say, I'm going to do the hard thing for the bigger gain, are people you want on your team.
Yes.
You give them the space and the support to do that. What we have been going through in realigning our lives is actually a skill set that's really hard to build. And if you have another thing that's helping you do that and you can capitalize on that as a business, lock in.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I just want another hour with you. Life's not fair that I have to.
We're like every time we talk, we can go on for like days.
Vanessa very kindly did a pre-call with me, and it was just one of the best hours of my life. And
this has been the same. I think it was supposed to be an hour, and we went way over.
Yeah.
To the point where all of our teams were like, I've got to go on to another call. My team were like, you've actually gone through two other meetings now, Vanessa. I feel so passionately about women's capabilities being undervalued in society in general, mothers and, you know, those who choose not to be or are not, and this idea that men are being underserved and underutilized
vital insights, absolutely. These are called quickfire, but there's nothing quick about
okay.
them. Motherhood is teaching me ...
Humility. Mm. I thought I was humble before, but every day I'm humbled by
honey.
Huh?
By honey.
By bloody honey. By Jesus Christ, it's like someone said to me, God's given you that son because he's the only man on this planet who doesn't listen to you, which isn't true. But I'm learning so much about, you know, needing different approaches for different people. So humility and just like the unending depths of love. Mm. Yeah.
What's something that you used to value before motherhood that you no longer do?
I don't know that there's anything I don't value, but I think my levels of values are placed differently. Mm. Different relationships, other people's opinions of where my life is at, and the value I place on, for example, what my career looks like to other people has completely shifted. And it's empowered me to make moves that other people don't understand, mm. that other people might think are bonkers, that leave people scratching their heads. It doesn't matter, because on your deathbed, those people won't care anymore. Once you're killing it and they see the other side of it, everyone says they were along for the ride, right? So I think that I've seen that with parenting is that, you know, when your child is misbehaving, you know, everyone's like, where's the mother? When your child's behaving well, everyone who's ever had a touch point says, well, you know, I loved having them over and I did this. And so I think it's like just understanding that just focus on your goals and get to the place you want to be, and everyone else who's important will come along, and don't worry about how things look. I think that's probably one of the biggest things.
And what is one gift that you would give to all mothers in the world, and why?
Oh my gosh, so many. You know, my love language is gift giving. Like, I love to give people gifts. I love to really listen to the nuance of what people say that they like or they're into or they don't have. So this is a big one for me. I don't think I can choose one. I'll have to say three.
Go on then.
We haven't prepped on these, and I'm really glad we didn't, actually. None of this, actually, is all of it's been so organic. But the gift of a village. And I think that women need that. We were not supposed to raise our children in isolation. And the reason that a lot of women feel so frayed when they've been alone with their child for long periods of time is we were not supposed to do it.
100%.
And I think that society have reframed this as you're somehow a bad mother. If you need time out, if you need support. We were always, the African proverb of it takes a village is because that's the way we were always supposed to raise our children. And if you don't have that in family, because of your family situation or where you live or what have you, you can build that, but never feel badly about wanting communion around you. So the gift of a village, the gift of other people who get it, who pick it up, who will speak life into you, who will make the cup of tea after you've let it go cold a million times, that's really important. The gift of confidence. I see so many women right now, particularly in the AI age, feeling shaken by the career parenting duality. And I think that there's so much more capabilities that we can have to help us juggle better and with less stress and ease. That doesn't make it easy, but I think we should feel confident about the education that parenthood gives us, the skill set it gives us, and how to translate that into the workplace, and the gift of joy. And I think so much of modern society is robbing women of their joy in motherhood, because we're so worried. We're so worried about being at the school gates. We're so worried about pickup. We're so worried about picking up the work after kids have gone to bed. We're so worried about, did we cook a home cooked meal this week or whatever it is, that we're missing so many of the small joys. And I have recently unpacked my entire life in order to not miss the joys of this. I loved it when I was younger, the joy of other people's kids. And I've made the decision recently that I need to have a career that allows me to the space to feel the joy of my son shifting, changing, doing crazy things, discovering things, whilst also having the fulfillment of having a career. And I think we should not underestimate how important it is to have those joys. They are the fuel for the nights when you're up with a kid with a temperature, or you're on a deadline and it's half term and they don't have enough to do, and all of those things. So those are the three things. And that wasn't quick fire at all, but it's so much to discuss.
That was beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, I'm too deep for quick fire. We need to rebrand them. We need to call them deep questions at the end.
Fast as you possibly can.
So. Yeah. Where can someone find you? You're amazing on Instagram.
Oh, thank
you. Sharing
you.
These insights and LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm currently working on all of those platforms. So I am just at Vanessa Kingori on all of my platforms. I'm trying very much on my platforms to not be one thing. And I find it really interesting. You brought that up and going off on a tangent. I guess it's another thing I wish for women is the world is telling us that we need to present as one thing. Mm. And it's bullshit, excuse my language, because it's a cage. And so what I found, again, with my social media, in the same way that when I was pregnant, I felt the need to up the ante on, look at me at work, I'm doing this talk, I'm pregnant, I'm running this team, I'm doing, like, it's possible. Now that I've seen being seen as this person who's like very successful in her career, a lot of my content is about that, but it's also about spending loads of time with my family,
yes.
spending loads of time with my girlfriends,
yes.
being on holiday and being in a swimsuit one day and then being in a suit on stage the next. We are not, you know, 2D personalities, and we're either a corporate baddie or a mother, or we are a partner, or we're a friend. Our value is that we're all of those things. So if you find my social media a bit confusing, as a business partner of mine said the other day, is just like, can you pick a thing? It's like, well, life, that's not my life. And the reality of my life is I'm all of those things. And I'm a better mother because I work. I'm a better business leader because I'm a mother and I'm a good friend. And so, yeah, the my social media is where you can find me being lots of different things.
Oh, I love it.
Broadly confuse men.
That's what we're here to do. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I just love this. And thank you for building such an amazing platform and safe space for women who are juggling what's objectively hard.
It's hard. Thank you
amazing.
So much.
Thank you.
That was the episode. I hoped you loved it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe, and I will see you next time.